There is only one podcast that can legitimately call itself the voice of reality TV. Download the show at rffradio.com. We are not sure if they can play nice with each other, so now, from separate studios deep in the Husker Nation of Nebraska and in the Big Apple, are Rob and Trevor with the Reality TV Podcast.
Welcome to the longest-running reality TV podcast on the internet. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Rob, and welcome to another exciting edition of RFF Radio. We had Survivor, The Amazing Race, to talk about, but we have somebody a little bit more important on the phone lines tonight. Friend of the show, Jay Holland Moore. How are you, Jay?
I am good, and let me tell you, I just came up with a new show seconds ago.
Oh, no.
Just listening to the intro, the only podcast that can call itself, what is it, the only source for reality?
Yeah.
What's the wording there?
I don't remember. Do we have to listen to the opening again? The legitimate source of reality TV.
I thought it was a true source.
Yeah.
True voice.
The true voice? How many years have we had this opening and I don't listen to it?
We paid good money for that guy. He's coming into the voice over too.
And I don't fucking listen to it. Anyway, sorry.
So the first thing we'll have to do is get you guys to pay attention to what you're showing, what you're playing. Just a little more attention to detail.
Oh.
But then we take other podcasts about reality shows, and we have their host fight you guys.
Ooh.
Every week. It's a different fight. And then we'll see who really is the only legitimate podcast.
It wouldn't be us. We would lose in the first week.
I don't know. I've been taking boxing.
No, it's pretty strong. It's a reality show, so it would all be fake anyway.
Good point. Touche, my friend. So how the hell are you? We haven't talked to you in a while.
I'm good. Still reeling over being shut out at the Reality Awards.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I am pissed.
Oh, man. It was a mess of a night, I got to tell you.
Well, let's talk.
It's all by them to stream their show, by the way. I was standing. Everybody got a chance to watch it at home.
Yeah, I didn't. It didn't work.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
I'm living in bumfuck Nebraska, and I can do a live stream from my fucking bedroom, and they can't figure out a live stream for their award show that they put some substantial money behind, I would assume.
Yeah, well, I would think so. I mean,
because Rob live streaming in his pajamas before.
Yeah, says the man who's live streaming in his pajamas.
Here's how the night went. Bought a new tux for this thing just in case, you know. So I was ready to go, and then we show up and we're gonna walk the red carpet, and they take everybody individually, and everyone stands there by themselves, and then the photographers go nuts taking pictures on it. We've got all these beautiful women there, photographer's dream, it's going well. And then Lombardo Boyar, who played Chico on the show, he's supposed to go next. And what they do is they have a dry erase board, and they'll write your name down and what show you're from, and they'll announce you, and then you step in front of the photographer. So he was the last actor to go, but they stopped him so they can get the – and I don't know her name, sorry, but the big woman from Dance Moms.
Oh, okay. I don't know who it is.
It's like I got a picture of Lombardo on the side of the red carpet being pushed aside to that large woman from Dance Moms. And then they go through, then they let Lombardo go through, and then it's my turn. And if you want to see a whole group of photographers stop to take a break, announce my name going down the red carpet.
Oh,
I mean, it's like the the most soul-crushing ego moment. I knew it was going to happen. I knew it was coming. There's nothing I can do. I'm already committed to the line. I can't get out of line. It was that. So that's how it started. And then, you know, a lot of times you think, well, you get nominees. You're a nominee for the show. You just go. No big deal. But they make you buy a table.
So
I had to buy a table, which wasn't cheap. And then I couldn't find anybody that could tell me where my table was. It took a long time to figure that out. And then we find our table, and the tables, it's not just like a table you can just sit down at. The table, like, they're all on this, like, riser that is like a giant bed with a table in the center. So, I'm not exaggerating. So you can't just pull up a chair and have a seat. You got to crawl up into this bed thing at this nightclub. There's no telling what's going on.
Oh, my God.
Was there at least an open bar? Were you able to drink comfortably?
They had a couple options for you for that. Otherwise, everything else you had to pay for. There's a lot of people there, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm just sitting there just fuming. You know, on the inside, I'm on the outside, I'm smiling and being happy. But
sure.
We can't really enjoy each other's company because we're in this. There's no way to get really comfortable at this thing. Especially me, I'm a large dude. I don't want to just sprawl across some whatever it was. So, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't like this. And then during the opening monologue. It's like, and it was a really good monologue. Matt Eisen was a host. He did a great job. But they're talking about, you know, these are the reality awards. Screw actors. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Uh-oh.
And I'm at a table with a bunch of actors, and these actors kind of had a lot to do with the show. And, you know, these are all amazingly talented people. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. But luckily, I knew, I can't say who it is, but I knew someone that had access to the backstage area.
Okay.
And I was able to text them and find out we didn't win anything. So we left and went next door. And it's funny because, like, there are pictures on Twitter. Like if you follow the cast, there's a few pictures posted. Like we took a picture, a group photo afterwards when we were leaving. And if you look at it, like on my right arm, I've got Amanda Landry, who played Wanda, you know, just beautiful woman. On my left, I've got Nikki McKenzie, who played Allison.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Nikki is just, you know, in person, like...
You looked like a pimp there, didn't you, Jay?
Oh, my God, but it's funny. Because it's like, she's standing there, and like, she's one of the most top five beautiful women in the world. Like, yeah, I mean, she's just striking. And then next to her, Megan Falcone, who was Skylar on the show.
Yeah.
And then Chelsea Chris, who was Chloe on the show. And everybody's smiling, but I'm just so bitter from the losing. And... this look on my face, I look miserable. I should have been, like, the happiest man on earth. And it's a funny picture when you look at it, because it's like, you can tell, this dude is ticked about something.
Oh, God. So you knew before the award show even started, basically, that you didn't win.
Well, I knew it had started already.
Yeah.
But it was... I had such a bad vibe from everything that had happened.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, I just want to know. Because I don't want to sit through this.
Yeah.
For, you know, how many hours. I did, one good thing about the night, I did get to meet Brace from Gigolos.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You did tell me that.
Yeah, the Gigolo's crew was there, and, you know, Brace. You know, you got to love Brace.
Oh, yeah.
He's just so damn funny.
How many people were how many people attended something like that?
Oh, man, that's a good question. There were a lot of people there. It was, oh, man, I'm terrible at this.
Sorry.
I would guess maybe 500 or so.
Wow, yeah.
500 to 800. But, again, I'm terrible at this.
Yeah.
So it could be way off.
It was actually 104. It was actually just 104. That's the number I heard.
That could be true. I would have had more room at my table bed if that were the case.
Yeah, there were people that worked in L.A. What was
that? There's a place called the Supper Club.
Oh, okay.
It's on Hollywood Boulevard. I guess during the week, it's normally just like a cheesy pickup bar, nightclub, club kind of thing. I will say this, you know, it's probably my attitude more than anything, but like the people that work there, they do a good job. You know, they do their best. They've always been pretty, you know, supportive of us. It's just, you know, it was just a kind of a cluster for us to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, so much, I don't know. It wasn't the most pleasant night in the world.
Yeah, I'm sure
some of that. Do what?
I'm going to throw the generalization out about hanging out in Los Angeles, even though I've only hung out there like 3 or 4 times.
Oh, boy, here we go. Strap in, folks.
Yeah. LA's got a lot of like cheesy club-type places. To me, the best parts of hanging out in LA are in like Playa del Rey, Venice Beach, and Santa Monica. I think you want to be near that beachy area. Anytime I've ever been in downtown Los Angeles and hung out or Hollywood, I've always hated it. But drop me off at, like, the Harbor Room or Moe's in Playa del Rey or James Beach in Venice, and that's cool, or Venice Bistro. To me, I think that's, like, L.A. is, like, almost like it got a divide between good places to hang out and really shitty places to hang out.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why you'd say that, but, like, there are great places everywhere. There really are, and it's just a matter of finding those places. You know, like there's great places along the beach, but like there's some great hangout places in Hollywood, and Los Feliz is another great place. A lot of great little areas there. There's great places. You just got to find them. You know, they're not going to be listed in the tourist books.
Hey, I have one great bar here in the town that I live in. It's the only bar, so it's great.
There you go.
It's like Roadhouse. You don't want to get
kicked out of that one.
No, you don't. You don't.
you're kind of screwed.
Absolutely. Can you explain to me how the fuck MasterChef won heartfelt moment? If I had to pick any category for you guys to win, that was the one. That was the one that I would have put money on.
Yeah. I'll tell you exactly how that happened. MasterChef was on Fox, and we were on Spike.
Fuck up.
So they just get by physics, they're going to get 10 times our audience. And, you know, that's kind of the thing, like, the awards are voted on by the fans, which I think it's great for the fans to have a voice, because that's what keeps these shows going. But We have no chance against a cable show has really no chance against a network show simply by mathematics.
Yeah,
like I would much rather the awards be picked by like industry professionals, and then have a couple fan favorite awards for like a few categories for fan favorites that the fans vote on. But when you leave it up strictly to the fans, the smaller shows are going to get lost in the shuffle through no fault of their own. I mean You know, like if one out of every 100 Joe Schmo viewers voted, and one out of every 100 MasterChef viewers voted, we have no shot.
Sure. Davey in the chat room says MasterChef also provided catering for the reality award, so that may have helped.
Oh, that probably could have helped. But I thought he was done before him. That could have helped. I was at catering. I didn't even see any food. The only food I saw was from the Cupcake Wars people. They had some cupcakes there.
My God, you didn't even get fed?
You had to pay for a table, and it wasn't an open bar and no food. No open bar and no food.
There was no food that I saw. Maybe I missed it. We definitely did not have a waiter or anything.
I would have burned that place to the ground.
In my mind, I did. But at the same time, I'm like, it's really not their fault. It's my bad attitude, and after hearing, screw all the actors, and screw wasn't the word he used.
Yeah.
You can use your imagination. that just kind of rubbed me wrong immediately. And I get it. It's reality. Everyone thinks they don't have actors on those shows, but they do. If you're fooling yourself, if you think they're not, they're not good actors, but they have actors on their show. We have great actors, and all the actors on our show, they were just tremendous people. And I really wanted them to win. I really wanted them to, to get the recognition that they deserve. Yeah. And I know it sounds cheesy, but they're great. They're great actors. They're so talented, and they're all going to be huge stars one day. There's no doubt in my mind. But I wanted them to get something, some recognition.
Well, they definitely made one hell of an entertaining show along with you. I've gone back and I've watched the Joe Schmo show over and over, and every time I'm laughing. I mean, there's something different that I'm laughing about, but it never gets old.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of subtleties in there. I wish I could show you all the stuff you didn't get to see. There's tons of stuff out there that were just magic moments that we just couldn't fit everything in. So
now, is it more up to Spike to release something like that on DVD, or is that a production company decision?
It's more up to it's more up to Spike, and it's more up to if it's worth it, if they think anyone's going to make any money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It costs nothing to make those DVDs. You can make them really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, is anybody going to make any money off of it when all's said and done?
Sure.
It's not a network show. There's not going to be a ton of people on there. I know you can buy it from Amazon and iTunes. You can download it. But the physical disc are available, and I doubt that they will be.
Well, then I guess we push everybody to go to Amazon or iTunes and buy those copies, because the world needs...
If they haven't seen it...
The world needs to see it.
They should, because it's... Yeah, it's a good show. It's an entertaining show. It's not mean. If you stick through all the way, you're gonna feel great. You're gonna have a great feeling about it. So, it's a positive show. I think there should be more of those out there.
Yeah. Now, you are still working on something. We might see something from you in the future, correct? You can't talk too much about it, I know, but...
Yeah, I can't. I really hope you guys get to see it, because, it's as good as Joe Schmo, I think.
Awesome.
It's different. It's different. You've never seen anything like it on TV, which is, it's a rarity to find something new. We're trying to. We made a pilot. Somebody gave us money to make a pilot, and we've done that. It's turned out great, and we're tweaking that up, and hopefully we'll have news for you.
Well, I hope you come on this show to let us know when that happens.
First stop, come on. Absolutely.
Well, you can stick around with us, or you can go back to fighting traffic. It's up to you. We're just going to sit here and talk about Survivor.
Well, I'm fighting traffic. I'm going to fight traffic, and I'll be here until I get to my garage, and then I'll lose you.
Okay.
So when I suddenly disappear and I'm not chiming in on anything, that'll be what happens.
Okay. So we were talking before we even come on the show. I don't understand how you people can fight traffic. I can't do it. I just can't. I would get angry.
It's funny. I've actually, this is a terrible thing to do, but I've turned down work just because I didn't want to deal with the commute. It's like, oh, I don't want to do that. And I get this show that I'm working on now, like, their offices are in Santa Monica, so I've got like a, 30, 45 minute drive each way every day. And, man, this week they closed the street that I exit off of. They closed it. They're doing some work, and so it's just a pain. It makes it so hard to get in and out of Santa Monica where I need to be.
I love Santa Monica.
Yeah, there's lots of posters of you around, Trevor. There. They love you too in Santa Monica.
I have a question that you'll probably have a unique perspective on. Series finales, right? You probably know best how tough it is to end a series. How I Met Your Mother been getting a lot of criticism. People thought by filming the finale, filming the last scene of the final episode years ago, it made it so the end of the show didn't grow with the characters, and people are kind of upset about the way that it ended. They kill off the mother, Ted and Robin, at the end, you see that they're probably going to be together. Doing an episode like that, or like Psych series finale, where they just kind of went with a normal episode, and then the last 15 minutes had a bit of a goodbye, but it was kind of like it was a good series finale in the sense that it wasn't disappointing. How tough is it to end a show that's like big like that, would you say?
Oh man, it's so tough, and I thought they did a great job with how I Met Your Mother. I was very satisfied. I thought they tied it up nicely. But it's tough. It always helps when they give you time when you know it's going to be your last season. A lot of times you don't know. And, sometimes they'll tell you as you're finishing taping, like, this is your, by the way, and, this next episode will be the last one of the series. That's when it gets tough. That's when it's like, oh, man, we want to wrap everything up. But, the longer a show's on the air, the more storylines there are, the more loose ends there are, the harder it is to wrap things up. And, it's a real challenge. I think, in my opinion, the greatest series finale ever is Friday Night Lights.
Oh.
That was fantastic.
I don't know. Yeah, that series finale was so good, so well done. It answered everything. It left you with a positive feeling. That, in my opinion, is the best series finale ever. I think Seinfeld was one of the worst.
That was not a good one.
Not at all. And they know that as well, and that's why, Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of gave them another shot at it.
Yeah.
But it's tough because it's also, it's the final show, and the fans know it's the final show. They're disappointed to see their show go away. So there's, it's hard to please fans of the show because it's like, I want more of this. I'm pissed that it's going off. So that's tough. And then sometimes if the show is kind of on its last legs, the people working on it don't care as much. It's usually a big fight before a show ends its run if they don't end it on their own terms.
Sure.
So, it's tough, but, I thought How I Met Your Mother did a good job with it. I didn't see the Psych one, but How I Met Your Mother, I thought it was, it made sense.
I don't know. Did you watch Breaking Bad? I thought Breaking Bad ended great.
Yeah, it did. I thought it was fantastic.
I
And that's another one that I would put right up there with it. That show as a whole is just one of the best shows that's ever been on TV.
It's an amazing.
It's one of those
five seasons of TV, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those shows that every week when those credits came up at the end, my mind was always blown. I was talking back to the TV, like, what just happened? You know, it was one of those shows that did that, and it's awesome. You know, I thought the Sopranos finale, when that happened, was a little lackluster. Yeah. I see why they did that, but
everybody, I would say Sopranos is probably on the short list of the most hated series finales, definitely. Yeah. To me, I thought Law and Order was the worst because they didn't end the show because they were trying to figure out if they were going to move to TNT or some cable channel or not. I think the best one to me is still Cheers, though.
Cheers ended really well. They were talking about that in the chat room.
Cheers was great.
Yeah, they were talking about that in the chat room.
Cheers ended great. Eastbound and Down, I don't know if you guys watched that show.
I did never watch that show, but I kind of want to get into it.
Super funny. It's one of the best pilots I've ever seen, but it has highs and lows, but it's super funny. But I was at a, this place here called the Paley Center. I think there's one in New York as well. And it's like a TV archive, and they'll have cast come in and do talks and things. So I went to the one for Eastbound and Down. And this was after season two, and they were like, this show has always been envisioned as a three-season show. We're only doing three seasons. We know what the stories are. You know, next season is it. And next season, you know, it did super well. And you can see, like, the last episode of that third season was supposed to be the finale, and it was awesome and perfect. And then they tacked on an extra scene because they obviously HBO offered so much money to do a fourth that they couldn't turn it down. And so you can see, if you watch the last episode of season three, it's obvious where the show should end, and it's beautiful. And then they add that one little scene at the end to set up another season that, you know, it was just so obviously a cash grab. So, it's a weird business. You can never count on anything because everything can change.
And I think some shows try to set themselves up in case they want to do a movie too. Sex and the City and Entourage are the obvious ones. But even Monk, they foreshadowed at the end of Monk, Monk's going to the movies. So, yeah, it seemed like the writers were like, well, just in case we can crank out a movie out of Monk, or some TV movie, we shouldn't end it just yet, right?
Oh, I guarantee you they were thinking that, right? Like, that those conversations happen. I mean, there's a big push going on social media right now for a Community to get a sixth season, because they say that's what you need in order to eventually get a movie. You need six seasons. So everybody's trying to push Community to get picked up again so they can do a movie. But all those things, they talk about them and think about them constantly.
Is it hard? I mean, I guess I would think that it would be hard to write a show to set yourself up for a movie. I would think that would be even more incredibly hard to do that than it would be to just end the show. Go ahead.
I think the thing is, you want to make sure that your finale doesn't have your main characters, any of them dying or drastically changing their character, like having an epiphany in the last show that changes their character completely.
Mm-hmm.
You think about it in terms of everybody needs to stay intact, and they usually have some kind of loose string, like a couple loose strings that, you know, may not be major loose strings. It may not have been something that's been there throughout the whole series that they need to tie up. It may be something that just came up that season that would be nice to tie up. But you leave those strings dangling.
Yeah.
So there's a reason to do a movie.
I felt like Sopranos, that's what they were kind of angling for. Right? They never solved the whole Russian. They never solved the Russian. I felt like they were kind of leaving things open because they thought they'd get a movie. And now that James Gandolfini's passed away, it's almost like, you know, now the ending of Sopranos is a bit unsatisfying because they'll never tie up these loose ends.
Yeah, and you know what? Another thing that may have happened, you know, a lot of those storylines that are loose, that are not tied up, they never probably had any intention of tying up. You don't realize what people are going to, grab onto when you're making these shows. So I'm sure they were just like, okay, so we'll have this a couple episodes. You know, we'll have this Russian guy chase him through the snow and stuff, and he'll just disappear. And, like, they probably were like, we'll never have to deal with that again. And then when it airs, everybody's like, what happened to that guy? And, you know, you never know. And, you know, that's the same with Lost. You know, a lot of people complain about their finale. Mm-hmm. I thought it did a fine job, but there were so many storylines throughout the year, you couldn't possibly tie everything up. And I guarantee you the writers had no clue the way some of those storylines were supposed to be, and had no idea where they were heading. It was just like, hey, this works for this episode, and it's great. And then, several seasons later, you've got all these storylines. You can't get them all.
Rob will tell you I'm like the biggest Lost fan on the planet. You're right. I mean, I liked the series finale. I liked the series finale of Lost more than most people. But they left.
Yeah.
I mean, you could write a whole book on the amount of storylines they never wrapped up. I mean, we never knew why the hatch was there, right? I mean, they did a whole thing on the hatch in the season, but we never really got the understanding of why the hatch was there. I mean,
And ask me how much I love Lost, because I hated that show. I watched four episodes, and I was done.
Oh, you're wrong. You know, it was so good. Like, I loved the first season, and then I kind of went away. You know, I didn't have time to watch it again. And then they did this thing. I was, like, two seasons behind. They did this thing where they caught everybody up. They did, like, a special.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I was up to date on the storylines, and I was back into it for like the last three seasons. Like, I loved it. I thought it was great. I enjoyed the finale. You know, it was one of those things. But yeah, there's no way you could tap everything. And I guarantee you, like, they didn't know when they started that show if they probably thought they were just going to get one season. They didn't realize what kind of hit it was going to be. So a lot of those weird things, they had no intention of ever paying off because they didn't think they would. And then it's like, oh man, we got to tell. Like, it's crazy. You got to keep up with everything.
Here's another question. You probably know an answer, a better answer for than that. How much is TV being affected by the fact that nobody really has to watch live TV anymore? Right? Like, I know that I've missed The Americans on FX, and I know it's a good show. But I've made the conscious decision with myself that I'm just going to let it keep airing and at some point just binge watch it on Netflix, because I love binge watching shows on Netflix.
It's funny. We were talking about this today. It's having a huge effect on TV. It really is. Like, I would say eventually the networks aren't going to really exist, I don't think. Because there's so many different platforms like Amazon and Netflix and Hulu, all those different things that are putting on great shows. Everybody does DVR it and wait. If they miss a few, they just DVR it and wait to watch the whole thing. And that's killing the advertising dollars. Like, it's going to change things tremendously. And, you know, I see a lot of, like, YouTube videos that I think suck, that are terrible. And people love them, and somebody made the analogy to me today. They're like, that's like when punk rock came out. A lot of people said, well, this is not music. They don't even know how to play their instruments.
That's
and
true.
I was like, whoa. Because it is, like, these YouTube videos and things like that, to me, that's not TV. They don't know how to, you know, tell the story right or how to edit right. There's so many little technical things that they don't know how to do. But nobody cares. It's all right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the younger generation is not watching TV. They just don't. They watch everything online. everything on YouTube or Hulu, whatever. So they don't really know what's supposed to be good and what's not. They know, hey, guy got kicked in the nuts. That was hysterical. You know, they laugh, and that's what they keep going to. So it's, you know, the networks are going to have to adapt soon because, you know, it's almost like cell phones are coming out and the networks are beepers.
Yeah. Well, but on the flip side, and we talked about this a little bit on our show, if it wasn't for AMC, and I'm going back to Breaking Bad because I feel like it's a good example. Yeah. If AMC didn't stick with Breaking Bad, I feel like Breaking Bad got a huge following, me included in that, from Netflix. I binged watched the first 3.5 or 4 seasons on Netflix, and then I was caught up when it was airing on TV, and that's what led up to an 11 or 15 million viewer finale. That's a revolution.
Yeah, it totally, you know, they feed each other. But when you have things like House of Cards on Netflix that just totally bypasses the network.
Right.
And gets huge enough, you know, huge numbers and big hit for them. You know, that's where they go. And you know, people like Amazon and Netflix, you don't get all the notes. You have a lot more freedom as an artist at those places. And so that makes them really appealing to producers and actors. You know, I think Orange is the New Black.
Oh, love that show.
She sold that. She could have sold that to HBO. And she was like, I can sell it to HBO, but it'll be a year before I get to make the pilot.
Right.
And then another 6 months for them to decide, whereas I can shoot them all right now and get the whole thing up on Netflix.
Yeah.
And so that's what she's going to do. So it's going to be interesting the next 5 to 10 years if the networks are there as we know them. So something's going to change big time.
Do you think the more talented filmmakers and whatnot are now gravitating towards TV and Netflix and Hulu than movies? It seems like every movie comes out now is some Marvel superhero movie or some, like, Pacific Rim or something like that, some big budget blockbuster, and all, like, the real artistic, great, well-written shows are now on TV. That's just the way it feels to me. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think with movies, you know, it's everything you see on TV and in movies is all, the only reason it's there is because somebody thinks they can make money on it. That's it. No one is putting anything out there for artistic reasons.
What? Are you telling me that Hollywood's driven by money? Okay, stop the presses.
Exactly. You know, I like to think it's art, but it's not. And, those big movies like Pacific Rim and all the Marvel movies, always going to sell a ton of tickets no matter what.
Yeah.
So those are givens. Like, people know the stories, but, you know, it's just like, that's going to happen. The TV, everyone right now is worried about offending anyone or taking, you know, doing anything that is remotely edgy because advertisers won't come. And, well, that's what they think. But, when you see shows like Breaking Bad, which are very edgy, people like that, and advertisers come to that. But on paper, that show should have been on a major network. But major networks couldn't air that kind of stuff. They're too scared to do that. Or they're not scared, but they're answering to too many masters. You know, there's too many, they cover too many people, and there's too much money out there for them to risk doing something that might offend somebody or might be a little edgy. So they rather make everything just super broad where nobody can be offended. But at the same time, you're not really thinking that much anymore.
Yeah. I guess I have, and this works right into your point, you know, the minority of people are the ones that are offended by it but have the loudest voice, and that's the ones that the TV networks listen to. I mean, 99 people are not going to find it offensive, but the one person who does is loud and screams and hollers, and the maybe the advertisers too, along with the networks, get scared and they back down, and 99 people miss out on something that one person doesn't want to see.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's
yeah.
I like to say if I was running a network, it'd be different, but. Who knows? Yeah. I may be like, well, there's a lot of money on the line here. Maybe I shouldn't do that.
Do you think that helps?
Who knows? I mean, it's,
do you think that helps the AMCs and the FXs of the world? Yeah, because, all right, so some network passed on Breaking Bad or Sons of Anarchy or something. So these shows, which are incredibly well-written, really good, end up on those channels and are like that, or just anchor shows for those. I think FX and AMC have been the biggest beneficiaries, right? You know, because FX, you got Sons of Anarchy, The Americans, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You got like a murderer's row of well written television shows. And then AMC, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, The Walking Dead. It seems like those channels have really just kind of made out on this. And Netflix, for that matter, with House of Cards and Orange Is the New Black.
Yeah, it's funny. Like the ones, you're 100% right. The ones that are making out are the ones that aren't afraid to take chances. You know, that's the big thing. Like they let the artists go in and do their thing. You know, they're not afraid to be a little controversial, and you know that's great for them. And you're gonna have more great shows on cable. That's why, you know, a lot of your Hollywood stars are coming to cable to do shows because they're like mini movies every week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Breaking Bad was a mini movie every week. Walking Dead is a mini movie every week. And it's very beneficial to those cable channels, without a doubt.
It's got to be hard for them. I'm just, from the perspective of a cable channel like AMC, it has to be scary. After season one of Breaking Bad, they didn't have great ratings. It's got to be scary to continue with something like that, not knowing if you're going to make money on it at the same time, too.
Yeah, you know, it takes a lot of guts, and I'm sure there was a lot of creative solutions and payments that were made. Like I'm sure the budget on season two, as opposed to the budget on the last season, nowhere near the same number. I mean, they weren't doing things that were vastly different, but you just find a way to make it work. As a producer, I know we do that. Like, we find a way to make things cheaper, as cheap as possible, so it's more appealing for someone to buy it.
Sure.
And if you can make something that is not expensive for the network, they all have their price points. And if you can make a show for that, for a number that's under their price point, it can rate way lower than a show that is over their price point that rates higher.
Sure.
So you know, it's all about the finances, and if you can make it work, you can stay on the air a lot longer.
So is a TV show much like a business where the talent is the biggest part of the budget, or is there something different that I or the rest of the world doesn't know?
Yeah, I mean, there's it all depends. Like when a show starts, it's not the talent; it's just the physical. And again, it depends on the talent. It can definitely be the talent.
Sure,
but there's so much. So many costs that are involved in things that you just don't even think about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just editing a show is incredibly expensive, and you know, and shooting a show. I mean,
sure.
All the people that are required, all the equipment that's required. It's staggering. Like it's crazy how much things cost. And, you know, it is like when you go to do the thing, it's like you've got a small army.
I'm sure.
You know.
And all those people want paid, too.
Yeah, I mean, people don't work for free. Like,
no.
It's got to, you know, it's insurance. There's just, everywhere you turn, there's another bill coming. It's crazy.
Now, when you're casting a show, like when you're casting Joe Schmo, do you work with the casting director in terms of getting actors and actresses in the door, as well as do you like go scout like the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and like check out improv shows and say, oh, maybe I want to add that person also. How much goes into the casting?
Oh, it's huge. Like we have a casting team that we use, and they're amazing. It's a guy named Ted Hahn and Pat Melton and Will Levine. Those three together, we call Pat like the improv whisperer, because she finds these actors that are just, she finds the best in the business. And, you know, and you can talk to different actors. Like we all, it's different when they go into audition. I always like to create a room where they're going to feel comfortable, because I know how tough it is to go in there every day, read some lines for strangers, don't get a reaction, and just leave and have no idea how you did. So I always like to, you know, make it a fun time. I just want them to have fun when they come in, whether they get the part or not. I want them to have fun. That's like the first thing that we do, and you know, a lot of actors respond to that, and a lot of we have Pat and the actors they bring in, they love her, they love us when they see what we're all doing. So it's a good environment for them to be in, but it's crazy. Like there are, man, we went through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of actors for each role in Schmo. Like it wasn't, we didn't see like 10 people for each role. Like it was a long process.
I love how the honking wasn't going on in the background. I'm sorry. Yeah. It just cracked me up.
How about that? I saw that. I don't know why they were honking. Like, there wasn't anything really wrong to honk. I don't know what was going on there.
But you were preparing for Schmo, like, at least a year in advance of even the first day of filming, right?
Oh, my God, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we've got we know what the story's going to be of every episode before we start casting.
Sure.
And because that's important. And, like, there's a few Schmo knockoffs that are trying to happen in town right now that I get wind of. And a lot of them are getting shut down because, you know, they don't know how to do it because they haven't done it. And they've seen it, so they think, oh, I know how to do this. And a lot of them are casting before the story's written. And it's like, that changes everything. I don't know how you do that.
But, yeah.
You know, casting is so, so, so important. But you also can't cast until you know what they're going to be doing exactly. So it's like which comes first, chicken or the egg kind of thing.
I have a hard time picturing that much, because I'm a spontaneous, let's just see what happens kind of person, and I can't imagine just putting that much planning into a show like that.
Yeah, no, you can't be spontaneous when you're doing a TV show like that. It's like, that's the last thing that you can do. I mean, you can do it. You probably won't be successful, but you can do it. You do it once.
I'd be like, come on, show up. Let's just start rolling. Action.
Here's my question. Ed. Here's another question. All right, when you're filming a show like Joe Schmo, they say like there's some actors and actresses that like look at their lines as being not something that they have to go by word for word. They can kind of do their own thing with their lines if they think it works. What's your thought on that?
I am all for that on a show like Joe Schmo. I don't know if it's a scripted, just straight up sitcom, and not as much, but on a show like Joe Schmo, absolutely, you kind of have to do that because, you know, these actors, as long as they get the story points that I want them to get out, you know, as long as they get those out, I don't care how they do it. You know, if they do it 100% the way it's written, which I think is the best way to go. That's great, but in a show like that, you don't know. You get that one character, but you don't know what's gonna, you know, where it's gonna go, when you can say that. So you kind of have to play that part, not by ear, but you have to, like every morning we started with, like, you know, you make sure you say this, you make sure you say this, and you make sure you say this. It can happen any time during the day, but it needs to happen before we can move on to the next thing, or it won't make sense. So you've got to find that time, and that's why, you know, the actors are so, these actors we have are so talented because they could do that. You know, they could change things on the fly because they knew the story so well. They did their homework. They knew what had to happen for the next thing to happen. And you could run in there and tell them, like, okay, we really need to get to this. And they would find a way for it to go there. I mean, it's, if you're not a good improv actor, you can't do a show like that because you're going to get lost. And you're going to say something that's going to throw the rest of the episodes off. Because you're planning on doing something and you can't do it because your actor just said something that contradicted that. You got to be a great improv actor to do that.
I can't imagine the pressure that they were under on a day-to-day basis, though, either. Just
yeah, but, you know, we gave them lots of drugs and they were drunk half the time. I really didn't feel the pressure.
Well, Jay Hollenmore, this has been one of the greatest podcasts I've ever recorded, I think. I'm serious.
You need more guests.
Well, this has been one of the most interesting conversations I've ever got to sit in and listen on. And it really is an honor to know you. It really is.
Oh, thank you, guys. I appreciate all your support. You know who would not have liked this podcast? The photographers on the red carpet would have no interest in this podcast.
Oh God, that is I know.
It's ridiculous.
Well, how can people get a hold of you on Twitter or anywhere else?
You know, Twitter is probably the best way to find me. And it's at Jay Hollenmore. I know what I'm going to give out my email address because then Trevor just be sending my porn all day or something.
I'll be spitballing ideas for your next sitcom.
Yeah. I can't talk about getting a computer virus almost immediately. I can't do that.
It'll just get an email from this pilot in the subject line. I'll be like, just my ideas. I'll throw some things by you.
Well,
exactly. But
thank you so much.
Twitter's always the best way. I answer everybody. So, you know, if you want to talk to me, come to me on Twitter and I'll find you.
And it's the letter J, Holland, Moore, right?
That's how you spell it.
Well, Jay Hollenmore, thank you for sitting down with us again tonight. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, anytime. Thank you, guys. I always have a blast doing it. You guys are the best.
Well, you can email or tweet me or text me anytime. And we'll have you on whenever you want.
We'll be in touch, and hopefully with some very exciting news soon.
I can't wait. I can't wait. Thank you so much, Jay.
Have a good night.
All right, guys.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
He is the coolest guest.
That was really good. That's probably the most informative podcast we've ever had.
I think it absolutely is. And how many episodes have we done now?
500.
400. Yeah, well, 400. This is 443. So, yes, out of the next 500 shows, it'll definitely be the most informative show we've ever done.
We have to talk about Survivor. Survivor was the most disastrous episode of Survivor, I think.
Yes. Isn't that terrible? Wasn't that just awful?
It's just a terrible out. I may not watch the rest of the season.
So, I think Spencer's screwed. I think
he's definitely screwed. You know what hurts the most is that he was going to give Jeremiah his idol.
I know.
It's like he figured out that they were going to write Jeremiah's name down, and he was going to do it, and then all of a sudden he saw Tony reaching for his idol, and he didn't do it.
Yeah. You know, here's what you do if you're Spencer in that situation. At Tribal Council, you announce, hey, guys, Tasha has immunity. You can't vote for her. I have an idol. I'm going to go ahead and give it to Jeremiah, or Jeremy, if you're Tony.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it to Jeremiah. Do with that what you want. And then hopefully they'll all go, okay, we're going to vote for Spencer now. And Spencer doesn't use it on Jeremiah. It just fake out, you know, pull a fake move.
I would say, or just have Jeremiah and ask the tribal council that he's holding the idol.
Yes.
And see if they'll switch their vote on the spot to Spencer. But, I mean, it's terrible in that either Spencer or Tasha deserve to win this game. I mean, let's be honest here. They've been the top two in every individual immunity challenge, or at least the last 3 weeks worth. I know Wu won the first one. They're obviously the best two players in the game, and they're going to be eliminated one after another. I mean, it's almost impossible. Unless something drastically screws up, the fact that Tony found that special idol basically means that he's getting to the final three. Tony should win. I agree with Spencer. Spencer's absolutely right. Tony should win. If Tony gets to the final three, he's going to win this game. He should win this game.
He should.
Because other four people in his alliance are just following his lead, and they should not be rewarded for just being walk-behinders.
Tony should absolutely win this game. He's played the best. He's manipulated the best. He turned on Jeffra and Trish, and they still followed him. They still followed him tonight.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. They really only needed Jeffra to find out. They could have even made Jeffra the deal. Just tell us who they're voting for.
Right.
Or at that point, when you're on that thing and you're trying to make sure you have Jeffra's vote, would you have told her you had the idol? Because I think that would have clinched it, probably.
I don't think it would have mattered. I don't think it would have mattered.
Let's say Spencer says, by the way, Jeffra, I have the idol. So as long as you're with us, we're the final four. I think that would have clinched it. I think that's, if I'm Spencer, that's the one move I'm thinking about in the back of my head. If I had told her I had the idol, would that have swung her?
Yeah, but, I mean, they made a Final Four deal, and Jeffra backed out on it anyway.
Yeah, but she didn't know he had the idol. She knew he had the idol in the game.
I don't know if that would have mattered.
That Final Four deal stronger.
I don't think it would have mattered. I really don't. I think Jeffra...
The votes had gone, had been Spencer and Tony, right? Spencer pulls out his idol, so he can't go. And Tony pulls out his idol. What happens when we have dueling banjos?
Yeah, that's a good question. You probably vote again, and you can't vote for Spencer and Tony.
And so then probably Jeremiah goes home.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. I'm gonna point this out. Tony found that idol literally in an afternoon. It's beginning to become way too. An idol that special should not be located at a tree everybody knows to look at.
Nope, you're right.
2 inches underground. To me, Tony, the moment Tony knew he was in trouble, he checked 2 places for the idol and found it.
Yeah, it was way too easy to find. They might as well have just hung it up in the forest with neon signs around it and said, here's the special idol, come and get it.
I mean, I think that clinches the game for Tony. Because you're going to have to write down his name twice.
Yeah.
You're going to have to, because he'll be able to use the idol post-vote at least once.
Yeah.
So really, your only chance of getting him out is at 4.
Yeah. That's the only way. And by then, it's too late.
Yeah. And by then, it's definitely going to be too late. Yeah. Because there's only 2 people in this game who seem like they can form their own opinion and get him out, and they're going home probably next. Spencer and Tasha are the only 2 people in this game who deserve to win other than Tony.
Yeah.
They're probably going home the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. East York Reality Fan in the chat room says they need to just get rid of idols completely, and Davey says they couldn't have hung it too high since Tony's kind of a midget.
it was the most disappointing episode of Survivor, I think, in history.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very disappointing. Like I said, if I was Spencer, I probably would have tried to make some sort of bluff, but it didn't matter. Didn't matter. Trish, can we
You know what really bothers me is that Cass is going to make it farther in this game. Spencer or Tasha, unless something drastically goes wrong next week, one of the 2 of them are going home, right? I mean, they show in the previews that Tony said, it's going to be chaos at Tribal Council. But how is it going to be chaos? Who's leading the charge to get him out?
Nobody, yep. but Spencer has planted the seed in Tony's head that somebody was going to vote him out, and he goes after her, or him or her, and then he's like, oh, it's going to be chaos.
Here's the only thing that could happen, would be if Trish, Jeffra, Cass, and Tasha decided, you know what, we should go all women. I mean, yeah. That's the only thing I could possibly think of that could swing it, right? Because there's four women and three guys left on the show. I mean, if Trisha, Jeffra, and Cass had any ideas of trying to win the game, which I don't think they would anyways, they would split off, go four women, and try to get it down to the final four.
Right.
And then try their... But, you know, what would happen is Tasha would just win every single individual immunity and then win $1 million.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I just disappointed.
Disappointing show.
Yeah.
Did not go how I planned it.
Nope. I can we talk about how dumb Trish is? That man is the stupidest person I've ever seen in my life. Talking about Trish, that gentleman.
I can't believe they're just gonna follow Tony right to the end. They might as well just cut him a check for $1 million.
Yeah, yeah. Survivor auction next week. Bennett brings up in the chat room. That's good news. I'm excited for that.
Problem is, one of the auction items is going to be the special idol that we now know that Tony has.
True.
So either Spencer or Tasha are going to save their $500, spend it for a clue to the special idol, and then find that it's missing.
Yeah. That's going to suck. That's going to be disappointing.
That's going to be really disappointing. Because you know the two of them are going to sit on their $500, wait to bid on something like that, and then it's going to bite them in the ass.
Yeah. It's a few weeks of disappointing shows coming up, I think.
Honestly, now, I've always asked this question. If you're at the Survivor store, right, obviously, I think even if I was in the driver's seat, I would save my money to buy it for an immunity.
Yeah, you have to.
Let's say the first thing comes up is help in an immunity challenge, and an idle clue might still be on the board. Do you blow your wad and go for the immunity challenge because you just want to make sure you get something? Or do you wait in the hopes that the idol...
I think you got to go for the guaranteed something. I really do. You cannot take a chance at an idol clue.
Mm-hmm. I really agree.
Don't think you can. I really don't think you can. So what are your predictions? We're not going to spend a whole lot of time because I have a little bit to talk about the Amazing Race, and then I'm tired and I want to get out of here. So,
my prediction, I mean, I hate to say it. I hope it doesn't happen, but I'd be stunned if Spencer survived.
I know. I'm with you. I think it's probably Spencer as well. The Amazing Race. So should we talk about that real quick?
Yeah, here's my take on it. It's a game, right? Brendan and Rachel should have... to me, you can't be mad at them for U-turning Dave and Connor. I'm sorry.
No, you can't be.
This is for money. This is down the stretch. Dave and Connor have been great all season. You know, you're playing to win. I hate when people, you know what? It's a game. Everybody's playing to win. Brendan and Rachel U-turn you, they U-turn you.
Can we talk about how stupid it was that Dave and Connor didn't U-turn Jet and Cord, who were standing right there? And you turned Leo and Jamal?
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Because they didn't know that Leo and Jamal were behind them.
What a bunch of...
They couldn't have been sure.
Flipping idiots. You turned Jet and Cord.
Mm-hmm.
Golly. Ah. I don't know. I was just frustrated with that whole episode. Just frustrating because, Brendan and Rachel have every right to U-turn Dave and Connor. I don't disparage them at all for doing that. But Dave and Connor should have U-turned Jet and Cord, who were standing right there.
Mm-hmm. Even Jet and Cord were kind of surprised about being U-turned.
Jet and Cord were astonished that they weren't U-turned. They should have been. And mm-hmm. Brendan and Rachel, by all means, should have probably U-turned Jet and Cord.
You know, Dave and Connor have been really strong in the season, though. I don't begrudge them for throwing a U-turn on Dave and Connor.
Yeah. East York Reality Fan says, I think Jet and Cord may have gotten to the box first, But that's not how the editing was, so I don't know. When I saw the donkeys, I was hoping they were going to have to play donkey basketball.
I felt bad that flight time and Big Easy got a little bit.
That was disappointing, but didn't I call them? Didn't I say flight time and Big Easy?
Yeah, you did say it.
Meh. I think Caroline and Jennifer are next.
Well, I mean, if I pick them, they're definitely surviving. I mean, they're the logical candidate.
They are.
To go home, but they've been strong all season. They had another good performance last week.
Yeah, they have. Well, should we get out of here for the week? I'm exhausted.
Yeah, sure.
How can people get a hold of you?
They can catch me at Trevor, rffradio.com.
I'm Rob at rffradio.com, twitter.com/RobRFF, and facebook.com/RobRFF. Guys, thanks for listening. Sorry it was a different show than expected, but I absolutely loved how it turned out. We don't get a chance to talk business inside with somebody, a producer out in Hollywood himself, Jay Holland Moore. So we appreciate him sitting down and talking with us and having really an interesting conversation. So next week we'll be back. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you back here next week. And it was redundant that I said that you'll be back here next week. See you guys.